Yeah.
Good morning. Welcome in. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, the midday show with Andy and Randy with you here on a hump
day.
Hump day.
Coming to you live from Flowery Branch. We are at the Falcons headquarters as they have a game tomorrow night right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game against Tampa Bay Bucks at home. We'll get a chance to talk to Chris Lindstrom coming up in about 40 minutes from right now. He'll step in here and sit down with us before practice. And then head coach Raheem Morris will join us after practice at about 1:30 as well. In between that time, we will also talk about the Falcons and the Bucks game tomorrow night. We'll talk about what the Braves didn't do last night and what they need to do tonight, and all kinds of other fun, unique shenanigans that you'll only get between 11 and 2.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's well, first of all, what's happening?
Hi, Randy.
Hope everybody had a wonderful Tuesday and are having a wonderful Wednesday morning. But, yeah, just the drive up here is a lot different now without the training camp for some, you know, again. It just felt different walking in the building because, you know,
a lot less people
and everything like that. But, yeah, it's always, you know, having experienced the short week and everything like that, it comes so fast. Like you just said, they got a game tomorrow. They just played. And so that timetable that we're about, you know, talking about how fast the game, it's even faster for the players.
Is there anything good about it?
No.
That's what I was wondering. No. Like, is there any part of it you actually like
long
as a
weekend.
Player?
Long weekend.
Okay, afterwards.
Yeah, long weekend.
But, like, the part between Sunday and Thursday, is there anything good about that?
No. But the thing about it is Thursday's fun.
Yeah.
It's just getting there,
sure.
You know.
Sure.
And, you know, like,
you're just sore.
Yeah.
You don't get the normal time off.
But, hey,
get the normal prep.
Ain't nothing Toradol going to cure. Give me a Toradol. Hey. All I need is to get through 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
That's it, three and a half hours.
And then you kind of have a mini bye.
And then you got a mini bye to hang out and everything like that. But, yeah, it's a division opponent, you know, first place in the division.
Yeah.
If you win this game, talk about the Falcons. And they're playing against a good physical football team in Tampa Bay. They're physical.
Oh.
They got big. Oh, well, hell. Chris Lindstrom's here now.
Look at that.
Rocking the Braves shirt. Well, he has faith.
Very good.
He has faith in the boys and everything.
We thought it's 11:04. We read it wrong. We thought it was 11:40. Just kidding. Whenever. Whenever Chris Lindstrom comes in and sits down, it's all good. We'll lead the show with the big guy. Chris, how are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Doing
interrupt and miss up the times.
No, we haven't even started talking about the Braves yet, and you got the shirt on, so.
Yeah, I'm ready to go. Big game. It was fun watching that Mets series the other day on Monday. It was so, you know, obviously got a big win in the second game and excited what they can do tonight.
Adopted Braves fan or grew up a Braves fan somehow?
Adopted. It's one of my favorite things to do here in Atlanta. Go down, sit in the Delta Club, watch all those games, and it's quite the experience.
Yeah. Flex right there.
Delta,
but I mean, here.
Nice.
Oh, I mean,
yeah, I'm telling you, it's my favorite.
We like the Delta Club too.
We do too.
We enjoy it. Chris, obviously, going short week and everything, how's your preparation been going because of the short week, quick turnaround after coming off a physical game?
The Thursday is always a challenge on the physical side, so you're always trying to recover, and Raheem's done such an amazing job to get us back physically. And then the mental preparation, just thankful that it's a divisional opponent who we have a lot of reps banked against, and just, you know, study and dive into what they do this year, what they do well, and you have all those personal reps with guys over the years. And so just really lock in everything, and everything's crammed in, but guys are doing a great job preparing.
How is your job different or affected, if at all, when the starting right tackle is out, is a backup right tackle, the starting center is out, there's a backup center, so the guys that you're in between are different than they were at the beginning of the season? How does that change your job at all?
I think it's just the communication aspect of it, and super fortunate that, you know, Ryan Neuzel's been here for 4 years now, and so ton of practice reps together, and even when he was a younger guy, he was given the defensive looks, and so we're always talking through those things. So we, you know, that's the continuity that we're super thankful that we have. So just one practice of physical, doing it together, and then you're hitting your stride because we both know what we want. And then Storm, I don't know how many games it's been together, but I think that was like our third or fourth game play together. So and both of those guys are such really good pros that, you know, you're never picking up for their – it's not like there's somebody that's new in the building. You got to pick up, you know, for them mentally. Those guys are sharp and on top of it. And so it's just the kind of the small things of how guys want to play things to see the difference.
How has – what, in your opinion, what is the little thing that's keeping this offense from staying on track on third downs? I mean – gaining, I mean, gaining more plays, all those different things. What, in your opinion, what is that little thing that's keeping you off of that?
I think Coach talks about it a lot, is we just got to stay in third and manageable, and then you just look at the percentage breakdowns. No matter, it doesn't matter who it is. You know, you're third and seven plus, it's hard to go. Like, those defensive linemen are good. The coverage is really good. So third and manageable is definitely, you know, the goal when you get in those situations, because the whole playbook's open. When those guys get the tee off and screw their cleats into the ground, you know, every single team in the NFL is really good. So just staying in third and manageable.
Falcons offensive lineman Chris Lindstrom joining us here to kick off the show live from Flowery Branch. Where do you feel like the offensive line specifically, but the offense as a total unit has improved the most from week one or before week one to where you guys are at now?
I think the operational standpoint of, you know, I think we had the turnovers and penalties and stuff like that, and I feel like we've gotten away from procedural penalties, and it's really just been, you know, in-snap penalties, you know, hands to the face, stuff like that, which is all technical stuff that, you know, you want to work on and eliminate. And Kirk's just done such a fantastic job communicating with us every day, and the reps keep stacking and stacking, and knowing what we want and getting a feel for things.
What is it like blocking for a quarterback where the defense pretty much knows he's going to be, like, at seven? He's not going to run out there or anything like that. Does your set have to be a little bit different because of that?
Yeah, it definitely does, but then there's, like everything, there's stuff kind of changes. So, you know, want to be inside out on it, but, you know, it's a great thing knowing also where he is, because, you know, where you want to force the rush.
Right.
And so, you know, we got to be firm and stout in there, and then also you kind of know where they're going to attack, and it's a little bit different each week, and their whatever pressures or, you know, style or rush they want to bring. And so, yeah, everything with protection is always firm inside out.
I know you guys, I mean, whoever's running the football, you guys have a job to do and create lanes for them to run in. But when Tyler Allgeier starts going like he was in the second half of that game, and he's running through folks and he's making guys make decisions like he was, what does that do to the offensive line just in terms of that fire you guys up? You're seeing him run like that?
Without a doubt, I think it brought energy to the whole team. You see him running angry like that.
Yep.
Even the check down that he caught on the third and 10, you know, He puts his foot in the ground and he's making a guy miss, and all of a sudden he's got a 14-yard check down when he threw it behind the line of scrimmage, and that's all just because of his effort and the style and how he plays. And absolutely love Tyler, and you know, he's the best wide zone back probably in the NFL. When he puts his foot in the ground and throws his pads into people, he's always going forward, always falling forward. And you love blocking for guys like that, because, I mean, I think it just energizes the offense and then the whole team. When you see somebody laying, you know, it's no different than D or AJ coming up and making the play and, you know, smashing whoever it is on a flat route. I think Tyler brings that same energy.
You said earlier, division opponent, obviously, Tampa and everything, you played against the team. Are you going to pack on the carbs and everything? Because unlike all of us, we don't know how what it's like to tackle and tussle with Vita Vea.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, tell us a little bit about him as a player and them as a whole defense.
Yeah, Vita's had a ton of success in the league. And, you know, he's been there in Tampa. And, you know, he's about as physically gifted as it gets. As big as he is, like 6'4", and they say he's 360. You know, who knows what the number is. But he moves as good as anybody at nose in the league. And his, you know, club hump is, you know, right up there with the best guys. And so when he gets going vertical, he's a very good player, very stout in the run. And have a ton of respect for him and, you know, the ability that he has. So it's a great challenge for us.
I know there's no weeks off. It's the NFL. But it just feels like, I mean, we're talking about week one and what that defensive line was like, and then Chris Jones and Vita Vea this weekend. Like, I mean, mentally, you just getting ready to go up against this attack every week, man. Like, obviously you're up for it, but it seems relentless.
Yeah, it's always a gauntlet with it. And then, but I think the challenge in itself makes you excited. Like, you know, like you said, the Steelers have probably the best defense and defensive front across the board. And Chris Jones is, you know, arguably probably the best interior pass rusher in the NFL. And then Vita is a fantastic player. And then, you know, just across the board, I think these defensive linemen are getting so good. But that's the beauty of the offensive line. And, you know, we always talk about, like, Alex Mack's big thing when I was a young player is offensive linemen are evaluated by consistency. Right. And so That's a challenge, and every single week going into that and embracing that, and that is a lot of fun.
Last one for me, and I want to go back to the – well, you talk about Tyler Algiers' wide zone and everything like that. What makes this go? What makes that – because, I mean, because a lot of listeners ask us, I can explain it, but since you're in it now, what makes that go? Because you sometimes you see it as a guy in the backfield. He might split a – because it's a zone, so it's really like a double team, but he might split it. How do you get that movement on that play that makes it so successful?
Yeah, I think it starts with the landmark. So the back has his landmark, and he presses that landmark, and we know as up front – we want to get that stretch and then cut off the backside. That's always the you know, core fundamentals of offensive line, wide zone. And then the back always makes you right. When he's pressing his landmark and he's on the correct landmark, he puts his foot in the ground and gets vertical. It's, you know, a huge gain. And if they want to go inside, he presses it outside. And so it's just really disciplined in those things. And I don't think anybody's better than Tyler and Bijan at that.
The Braves stay alive tonight?
Oh, absolutely. I'm all in.
We're going to hold you to that.
All right.
We're going to hold you to that.
I don't know if my confidence is there, but I like that yours is. Yeah. Chris Lindstrom, nice enough to hang out with us. Thank you very much.
Appreciate
Thank
it, man. Good luck, brother.
Falcons
Good
luck, guard, man. Chris Lindstrom, sitting down with us here to start the show off as we are broadcasting live from Flowery Branch. Thanks again, Chris. We appreciate it. Raheem Morris is going to join us in the 1 o'clock hour as well. But, look, I mean, we talked to him. Obviously, one of the conversations we've had all season is, damn, look at this defensive line they have to stop.
Yeah, man.
Vita Vea is a monster.
Vita Vea is
absolute monster.
Vita Vea is a problem.
Yeah,
and,
is.
And the biggest thing about him, as big as he is, he's athletic as hell. He's like
fastest.
When we were playing, Haloti Ngata.
Yeah.
He's just like Haloti Ngata. Yeah. Like, this dude, you got to put four hands on him. You can't leave him single blocked or anything like that because he doesn't have, like, elite pass rush moves like Chris Jones. But what he does is he has elite strength to push the pocket. And so when he's pushing the pocket, they're a hard team to beat.
360 doesn't believe it.
I don't believe it either.
380 probably. Fast as hell. I know, it's crazy. Lindstrom's got him, though. All right, we'll get a quick break here. We'll come back. We'll get to what's trending. Obviously, talked a bit off the top about what the Braves didn't do last night, what they need to do tonight. We'll get to that. Keep previewing the Falcons and the Bucks as well. We're broadcasting live from Flowery Branch right here on the Midday Show with Andy and Randy, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We didn't score. We couldn't, you know, you still got to punch back and score. It wasn't who we started. It was just we couldn't get anything going against their starter. We did a good job of limiting damage, and the bullpen did a great job of holding the game there. And like I say, it wasn't because of who we started that we didn't win this game. We couldn't get anything going offensively.
Yep.
Yeah, that's Brian Snitker there after the game yesterday. And he's right. I mean, it seemed early like that was going to be the story. It was, damn, A.J. Smith-Shawver just absolutely couldn't do it. Like, right. Just wasn't, you know, tough spot to be put in for sure. Good lineup, all that kind of stuff. He gives up three runs and gets four outs, and they pull him out of the game.
Rightfully so, because it was going to get ugly.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I was surprised he made it out of the first
inning. Yeah,
after Tatis hit that home run, I was like, I don't know, man.
Yep.
And I can't really say he settled down. He got a couple outs and got out of the inning and then immediately hit the first batter of the next inning. Now, he just barely grazed him. But nonetheless, Aaron Bummer came in and did his job. Jesse Chavez did a nice job. Apologies to Jesse Chavez.
Yes.
To Jesse. Said he shouldn't be on the roster.
Maybe he should have started yesterday.
Did his job yesterday. Yeah. But it doesn't matter when you score zero runs.
Yep.
Honestly, part of me is glad you didn't waste a Max Fried great gem or a Chris Sale whatever, because they weren't going to score any runs no matter who was on the mound for them. I mean, rinse and repeat. I don't know that we've seen that performance from the Braves 1,000 times this year.
Yeah, it was Shawver. He gave up the wrong pitch to the wrong guy, and Tatis put that thing in over there. It's a dog park right behind the field. A dog got that ball.
Yeah, that's a pet toy now.
Yeah, but
still Petco Park?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think, you know, your young guy. It was. I don't want to say the moment was too big, but. That's why I think a lot of us were saying maybe Ian Anderson.
No, the moment was definitely
because
too big.
We wanted Ian Anderson because of the fact is that, you know, I know he hasn't pitched in a while, but he knows what postseason baseball is.
Yeah.
We know that Shawver has not had the best time down in the minors either. So, but I mean, the moment was too big. It's like he didn't have no business they're in first place.
Right. It was a really hard spot to put it in.
You can tell me all of, and I said it yesterday. Remember this. You can tell me all about your stuff and all that other crap. You can tell me about it, but you don't get it done. I'm not blaming this young man or anything like that, but Snit did the right thing because it was going to landslide.
Yes. They got him out of there quickly, and Aaron Bummer got a double play on the next pitch, which was great. Yeah. But, and so then they were able to steady things for a while.
But Andy, they had multiple runners on base multiple times.
Oh, sure.
And nobody was able to bring the guy in.
Yeah, and the frustrating part for me about that is they also had the guys at the plate that you would want at the plate with runners in scoring position. You had Ozuna up in that situation, and he didn't come through. You had Soler up in that situation, and he didn't come through. Even Darnot, you know, given what this lineup is right now, is a guy who I don't hate having in a situation like that, and he didn't come through. They were 0-for-5 with runners in scoring position. And a lot of those bats were just non-competitive. Now, credit to King.
That was my issue. Yeah. Non-competitive at bats.
Yeah. Now again, credit to the Padres starting pitcher King. He was unbelievable.
Yes,
like that stuff was disgusting.
Couple of those lick strikes though. You know,
there was a rough strike zone, but again, like that's not why they lost the game.
No.
They lost the game because they're not very good at hitting. And when a couple of the guys at the top of the lineup gave you an opportunity, nobody cashed them in.
Yeah.
And, I mean, look, it's going to be another game like that today, probably. Now, hopefully you don't give up three runs in the first, you know, three outs like you did yesterday. Right. I expect Max Fried to be a lot better than that. But it doesn't matter how good Max Fried is.
They can't score.
If the offense plays like they did last night. And the frustrating thing is, it's not surprising that the offense played like they played last night. You know what I mean?
I mean, what did you say? You said it yesterday. Can we get some runs? Because of who was starting, you're like, well, can we at least get them some runs? You know, and they couldn't do anything. And that was the frustrating thing was that fact that they had guys hit the ball off of them.
Right.
They hit the ball. Yeah. They just couldn't get the guys home. They had a couple of guys on third a couple times.
Yeah.
But they just couldn't get
them
home.
As you dig deeper into it, it's not just leaving runners in scoring position the way that the Braves have all year. It's just the Braves don't have an ability as an offense, and maybe it's a mentality and maybe it's something that they need to work on in the offseason. They don't have the ability to scrape runs across.
Right.
They don't score the ugly run. They hit home runs and they score runs that way, or they don't. And that's basically what it is. And the offense, you know, even as bad as everything was this year, they were still fourth in baseball in home runs.
Like, really?
That's crazy. I know it's crazy to say that.
Was it down league wide?
Nobody hit any home runs this year because the baseball's made out of mashed potatoes now. But that's still true though. They still hit as many home runs as anybody almost. But when they don't hit home runs, they don't do anything. Right. They don't get runners over. There was a couple. Look, even I know Michael Harris doesn't steal a ton of bases, and I'm not blaming him for this, but he's fast and athletic. And if he gets on first base with a couple hits early in the game, manufacture a runner in scoring position. Get him over there.
Right.
You know what I mean? So then maybe if there's a productive out and he can get to third base, maybe he can score on a sac fly. But again, these guys don't even put the ball in the air. Like Soler's striking out on a ball that would have hit him in the knee if he wouldn't have swung at it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I mean, look, I hope that they can do it tonight.
Yep.
And I hope that they can do it tomorrow. If it's over tonight,
they got to get this one.
That's probably right.
They got to get this one. Max has got to go out there, and we know that we know this. He's got to go out there and be Maximus. We know. We understand it. But this got to be a complete team. They got to figure out ways to get on base and get home. You know, they haven't had a trouble getting singles, doubles, or you know, getting the guy with third base. They can't get the guy across home plate. They got to figure out that tonight.
I know, but that's the 163 games.
But that's what I'm saying. But then why watch?
Well, I'm gonna.
That's what I'm like. I gotta have some kind of faith.
I'm gonna watch one way or the other. I just don't expect them to do it.
Yeah.
Like expecting them to do it at this point. Hopefully they do.
Usually they do it when we don't expect it.
I guess whatever the optimism needs to be, whatever you got to say to get to the optimism. Like, I hope they do it. I hope they go off tonight. They've had these games where they go off and have these offensive outputs, but like the, you know, the last night wasn't surprising, and it wouldn't be surprising if they do it again tonight. What would surprise me is if they go out and score a bunch of runs. What would surprise me is if Jorge Soler comes up with a runner in scoring position and he has a productive at bat. That's what would surprise me.
And Musgrove's a good pitcher. He's a good pitcher. He's not. I don't think he's the guy that was pitching yesterday.
No. He's okay. You faced Musgrove quite a bit. Remember, he was the guy that Josh Donaldson got into it with years ago, and they kind of did the tummy bump. And he's a good pitcher. He's tough, but you can definitely get to him.
Tummy bump.
But again, like I don't know. I hope they do.
Yep.
If it ends tonight, I will be not surprised in the least. And then maybe they can start actually addressing some of the stuff, like approach at the. I know it has a lot to do with injuries and all of that kind of stuff. But there's just the whole season, it's been like this. You just watch guys go up there and don't swing at good pitches and flail at bad pitches and just throw at bats down the drain when you really need to be. Like the Mets won that game the other night in the first half of that doubleheader because that hitter of theirs had one of the best at bats that you're ever going to see.
Correct.
He's fouling off balls and he's got a great eye and he saw 11 pitches in that at bat and then everything changed after that in that game.
Same thing happened yesterday for them in Milwaukee.
I don't remember the last time the Braves had even one at bat like that.
Same thing happened in Milwaukee yesterday. Yeah. They were able to get to the bullpen and then the Mets went off.
Yeah, the Mets won yesterday. The Royals won 1-0 yesterday against the Orioles, and then the Tigers won yesterday 3-1 against the Astros. So, yeah, elimination game today. Hopefully Max Fried clutches up and is fantastic, and hopefully you can get a couple of runs across for him as well. Maybe we'll be talking about some baseball tomorrow too. Let's hear from Zach Robinson, who could be talking about the Braves here, but is actually talking about the Falcons offense.
Yeah, it's difficult because the biggest thing you got to do in this league is score points, and we're not scoring enough points. Our defense is doing a great job. We are just not scoring enough points, and so that's going to be continued emphasis on our side, what we can do to make sure we're maximizing drives, punching the ball in the end zone. When we get down in there, we got to score touchdowns, and so that's something we're constantly talking about. We got red zone day tomorrow. It'll be a big emphasis again tomorrow.
Yeah, they're not possessing the ball enough. They're not staying on schedule enough. We talked Lynch from RJ, they're not staying in manageable third down so you can keep the playbook open. And, you know, with that, you're not going to score points. The base of this offense is they want to run the football, but they're not able to do that, so that puts them in a bind where they got to maybe go off script that they want to go off of. But this is professional football. You go off script, damn it. All right, you just got to be, you know, I mean, that's what you get paid to do. You get paid to improvise. You get paid to make plays. You get this is why you make all this money to do those things. That's why he makes all the money to be the offensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons. You adjust, and you try to figure out ways to get this offense going and figure out ways to get your playmakers more involved. I know I said this, and I remember I said this that Monday after, or it might have been Tuesday after the Pittsburgh game. I said, sometimes you're going to have to sacrifice somebody getting out for protection. Well, they're doing that. But you know who that sacrifice getting out? Kyle damn Pitts.
Yeah, maybe the guy you want the ball with in his hands most.
Yes, you're sacrificing him.
Yeah.
Yes, you're sacrificing him in a standpoint. I know we talked about, you know, the targets and everything like that. He would have had 3 catches for 13 yards.
Right, that's the thing.
He would have 3 catches for 13 yards. Right. Let him do what he does. That's what we talked about, number 4 over. Why was he number 4 over? Because he can run like a damn deer. And they don't allow him to do that. And when he does do that and get open, they don't throw him the damn ball. The one time that he ran like a deer, it was a 50-yard completion.
That's right.
Throw him the damn ball. Yep. And I know they want to be in this 11 personnel. He's not an 11 personnel tight end if you're asking him to do those things. Put in the damn second tight end, reach your bottom, and let Kyle split out. It'll help the run game, too, because they're going to be in nickel anyways because of Kyle's ability to run receiver routes. Run the ball out of that. But he's not a chip-and-go guy because by the time he just chipped 4-yard flat route. If Kirk comes through, he does it.
Right.
But let him run. Let him run.
Yeah.
Let him run.
I don't know how hard it is for an offensive coordinator to adjust what he wants to do. Obviously, you do. We know that his history is being in that type of formation and that he wants to be in that type of formation.
Yeah.
And they've been in it in the first 4 games. You have this player who's not well-suited to play like that. Well, what are you going to do about it? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Are you going to keep that? Because here's the other thing. He's not very good at that either. He's not a very good blocker.
If they're going to let him if they're going to let him do that as an inline tight end in the 11 personnel, then let him run a route. Stop letting him chip through.
Sure.
All right.
But you're asking this guy who's not a particularly good blocker to mainly be a blocker and sacrificing his ability to get out there and be a receiver, which is the thing that he does best. So you're kind of screwing him over twice. Or screwing yourself over twice by using him that way. No, why don't you just put 2 tight ends out there? Is it that hard to do? Like,
nope.
I'm legitimately asking.
Nope.
Like, can I just?
It is not.
Or split him out wide and have him be a receiver sometimes.
It is not.
I don't know.
It is not.
Seems easy. We'll just tell Raheem that he comes down here in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Hey, Werner, Put Charlie
Werner. Yeah, put Charlie in there, man.
Put Charlie out there.
Yeah.
Let him be the blocking tight end, and then let Pitts go down the field and catch.
That's your paper deal.
We'll just tell him that at 1:30. Yeah. I think we fix it, probably. Archer's going to join us next. Dave Archer is here with us in Flowery Branch as well. We'll get his thoughts on what the Falcons can do to get that win tomorrow night at home against the Tampa Bay Bucks. So don't go anywhere. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, the midday show with Andy and Randy with you here.
Smoking!
Hump Day, broadcasting live from Flowery Branch Ticketmaster Studios as the Falcons get set for a Thursday night matchup at home against the Tampa Bay Bucks tomorrow night, which means me and Randy get to be up here on Wednesday.
Yep.
And we get the player guest. Already got him. Talked to Chris Lindstrom about half an hour ago. If you missed that, check it out on the website. It means we get to have Coach Raheem Morris with us in about 2 hours live in person. We get to ask him about everything Falcons related, getting ready for tomorrow night. And it means Dave Archer gets to stop by and join us in person as well here in
That's like when you go bowling and you roll like a 250 and then you have a bunch of gutter balls in the middle game. And then the next game you light it up again. So I'm like the gutter ball guy.
I was going to say it's like three strikes. And we made a turkey.
Oh, okay.
We got Lindstrom, we got you.
That's very kind. I'm just interested in listening to what Randy's going to dress up as for Halloween.
I actually did get me a new T-shirt, and it's pretty cool. So that's what I'm going at.
What is
you're
it?
Going
I can't
as
a, tell
you
that.
T-shirt? I can't tell you that. I got me a nice Halloween T-shirt because my kids are always asking me to do something, so I'm going to wear the T-shirt. I ordered it today. It's pretty damn cool.
Look, Daddy's in the mood. He's got a pumpkin T-shirt.
And it's pretty cool because it's – I'll tell you this, Arch. It's pretty cool because – everything about that shirt is me.
So you're going as yourself?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah.
That'll be good. I'm going as Andy because we're going to do a Toy Story thing. Lily's going to be Woody, which, fine, that's what she wants to do. Jack's going to be Buzz Lightyear, which is perfect because he's built just like him.
Yes.
And Ashley, I think we were just talking about probably Jesse, the cowgirl. Yeah. I'm going to be Andy.
Got to be authentic then.
The
you got to write on the bottom of your kids' shoes in big letters, Andy.
I actually do. I had Andy tattooed on the bottom of their feet so everybody knows they're mine.
That was good.
All right, let's just take a four-game snapshot, and then we'll start looking ahead to tomorrow night as well. But just kind of overall assessment, maybe some things that are as maybe better than you thought they might be, maybe a thing or two that's not quite as good as you'd like it to be through four games.
Well, I think that obviously all of us are kind of concentrating on what's going on that conversion down situation. You know, certainly you're not very good on offense on third down. You've been good enough to win a couple games. You've been bad enough to lose a couple of games. It's weird, too, Randy, when I look at this team, I said you could make a case for them being 4-0.
You can make a case for them
not winning a game.
Exactly. You
know? So it's really kind of a precarious spot when you start trying to gauge where they're at. On the defensive side, they have not been very good on third down. They have not stopped the run game significantly or enough to keep themselves in those situations where you can turn up the heat and come after the quarterback and do those kind of things. They've had to kind of play things across the board. They're playing a lot of high safety stuff to keep things in front of them. And they haven't given up a lot of explosive plays, which is cool. I think that's the thing you look at. They've really been pretty good in the red zone defensively. Conversely, on the other side, you've seen moments. There's been a play here or there offensively. There's been moments where they've gone right down the field. You look at the last two drives against Philly, they went right down the field. Now, they didn't get in the end zone.
Right.
And that's another thing. You know, so it's an incomplete for me. If you're going to put a grade on it, I'd say defensively B-, offensively C. That's kind of where I would put them.
Dave, do you still think they're starting to figure out the identity or the rhythm of this offense? Because, like you say, I mean, the obvious thing is third down. You know, they need 20 more plays. I mean, the other team is getting 20 more plays than they are. But do you think they found the identity that they're looking for with this offense yet?
No, I don't think so. And I think part of it has to do with I think they're still trying to get to know one another. And obviously the quarterback who's distributing the football, I mean, these are all new guys. And I think that you're seeing some of that. He and Mooney are starting to develop something. I love the way Drake has kind of almost – you know, I know there's a bad light being shined on Kyle Pitts and how he's being used right now. Like I said, but Drake's almost become that guy. At 6 foot five, I mean, how many grabs did he make on that that's probably a route you ran a ton as a guy. 12-yard inside breaking route, big bodied guy that can go get the football, strong hands. he's kind of taken on that role a little bit. And Ray and Mooney have been kind of the explosive guys, or the guys to get, you know, take shots at and stuff like that. So hopefully we can get Kyle going. But I think that when you go back to the identity thought, you know, they want to be physical, obviously, in the run game, and Tyler brings that, and Bijan does to a certain extent, too, when they runs behind that offensive line. But I still think they're kind of feeling each other out. I think, you know, Kirk's still kind of getting up to speed with how Zach wants to call the game, too. I think there's a lot going on there.
Is there, just from your eyes as a former quarterback, is there a reason why it might be going faster with Mooney and Ray and guys like that for Kirk than it is with Pitts and others in the offense? Like, is there something about what they do? Is it something about the play calling? Because it seems like those relationships are really going quickly, whereas with Pitts and others, maybe not as much.
Well, and I don't want to shine and I don't know this. I'm not in the meeting rooms. I'm not having the conversations in the locker room with the guys and stuff like that. I'll clarify that right now. But from a quarterback perspective, and Randy will tell you this, there's a trust developed with your receivers as to when you're going to turn the ball loose to them, when you're going to put them up to bat. You also begin to learn the little idiosyncrasies that they have within their routes. Randy had a certain way at the top of his route that hinted to me, when I'm going to throw the ball, as to when to get it out to him, to his quarterbacks, okay, if I was his quarterback. And guys are different. Guys have different wiggles. I had Billy White Shoes Johnson, and Billy was really easy to read at the top of a route. I knew there was a little head nod, shake. Boom, I could get it out. There were some other guys that, I'm not sure. Okay, now he's out, so now I can throw it. And you almost have to wait till he gets open or wait till he comes out of his break. Those are some of the things that cause an incompletion, maybe the ball on the back shoulder when it's supposed to be out in front. And those are the things they're kind of working through. So that's where I would lean towards, is some of these guys are a little bit more demonstrative in their movements, and you can kind of read them. And other guys, you know, the route looks different each time. Okay, wow, that was a good hard, crisp slant route. Yeah, he kind of rounded into that one that time. And I don't necessarily trust letting it go, you know. So those are kind of things from a quarterback, sure, receiver's perspective you get.
How's the defense been? You said they're playing a lot too high. Obviously, you don't want to give it the big play. You got those two smart safeties back there. What is going on the first and second down that they're not able to get on third down? Because, I mean, the other team is scoring – I mean, sorry, the other team is running 20-plus more plays than the Falcons.
Yeah.
And we want to say – I keep saying they need to run more plays, but obviously they're not – getting the ball enough to run the more plays. So what is the defense not doing?
Well, they're not playing tight, you know, and that they're playing off. So you're getting kind of cover four, which means you got four quadrants of the field. And I'll let you talk about this, Randy, after I get out of here. I don't need to describe coverages, but they're playing quarter, half. They're doing stuff like that back there, and it's softer. They've played veteran quarterbacks the last couple of weeks, and those guys have taken those shots. Patrick Mahomes, who wants to take shots down the field, took a couple shots early, got picked by Simmons down in the red zone. What did he do? Boom, he came down, he started picking you apart underneath. He started throwing all those underneath routes. What did you see last week from Derek Carr? All they were doing was striking down the field with Rashid Shaheed in the first couple of games. What did he do? Came right down, he started taking what they were giving. They're playing what a coach called me calling playing the keyboard. Take what they give you. Stay in manageable first down situations. So now all of a sudden it's third and three. It's third and two instead of third and eight, third and nine. There's the crux now. If you're Jimmy Lake and you're Raheem Morris, do we come up and play more aggressive and come up and press and take some of that stuff away, lending itself to shots down the field? Or do you like what you're getting? You're not getting the time of possession, but you're bending, and then you're kind of shutting them down when you get in the red zone. So so now you start trying to mix that. Okay, I'm going to come with pressure this time. There was a couple of times against in this last weekend against New Orleans where they tried to guess and come with pressure. New Orleans guessed right, and they got it blocked up, and they made some plays like that deep over route to Rashid that he caught on later on in the game. So that's the kind of the cat and mouse game they're playing.
Dave Archer joining us here on the Midday Show with Andy and Randy talking some Falcons. We'll get to the game tomorrow night in just a minute. I know you've been asked about this. You've hinted at it a couple times already with us here. We haven't asked you about it yet. Look, I think it's understood that they want to get Kyle Pitts the ball, right? They want to get him involved in the offense. What is your take? What is your thought on why it's looking how it's looking with him?
Well, I think that, again, it goes back to a trust thing, and I don't know that, and I haven't talked to Kirk, and Kirk hasn't said, "Hey, I don't trust him, so I don't throw him the football." So I'm not going to profess to say that. I'm looking at it from my eyes, and I've got to be able to know what he's going to do. And some of it falls on him too to be really, you know, aggressive with how he's going to play, whether it's chip blocking or whether it's, you know, running his routes. He's got to be crisp. He's got to be someone you can read really well. Again, I'm not in those meetings. I'm not talking to him or anything like that. It's me kind of guessing. I know nobody said anything to me like that, that, oh, he doesn't trust Kyle Pitts. I don't want that to come out and say, sure, hey, the Falcons right, don't sure, trust right. him. That's not why they're throwing him the ball. I think that there's a combination of things. There's never just one thing. Okay, he's not in a good mood, or he's not running routes, or Kyle doesn't like it, or Kirk doesn't like it. There's a myriad of reasons why it's going on, but they certainly need to get it fixed. He's too big a player, too big a target not to get him going.
What about this week, Dave? Short week, but it is a division opponent. We had Chris Lindstrom early talking about Vita Vea. Asked him, he's going to eat a couple of steaks, get him some pasta and everything in there, put some bricks in his pocket and have to deal with that big dude. But what is it about this? I know they got bum-rushed by Denver, you know, coming off of a big win against Detroit, but, I mean, they beat the hell out of the Eagles last week. Now, the Eagles were down a lot of guys, but they still went out there and beat them down. What is it about this team this year?
Yeah, Baker's a key to them. I mean, they don't really run the ball that well. I mean, Rashad White had, I think, his career high at like 900 yards rushing last year. But he's kind of a bit player in this thing. He's even more of a receiver potentially than he is. So Baker's the key to the whole deal. Can you pressure Baker? Because Baker wants to throw the ball down the field. Godwin's been a monster against Atlanta. We know how good Mike Evans is. But really, Godwin's been the guy that's hurt Atlanta more than Evans has. When it comes down to it, he all his career highs are against Atlanta. He had 14 receptions one year. He had 135 yards against Atlanta. He's had 400 yard games. So to me, Baker's the key. Can you get after him and can pressure him? That's what Denver did. Philly didn't do that. I just don't think that the run game. Now they're going to try to test Atlanta between the tackles because we haven't stopped the run. Can Baker be disciplined enough to do what Patrick Mahomes and Derek Carr did this last week? Can he take the underneath throws? It's weird because if you go back and you look at Brady's game against Atlanta in Tampa, I think it was his last game he played against Atlanta. It was the horrendous call where they
on Grady's
sack, right? Right. We're gonna get the ball back, potentially win the game. Brady pulled back and started throwing the ball underneath. He was throwing the ball to Otten. He was throwing the ball to White. He was distributing the ball underneath. That's what Atlanta was giving him. Now, obviously, it's a different defensive coordinator, but it's a similar style. Is he going to be patient enough to do that? So Atlanta has to tackle extremely well if you're going to play that way. You got to leverage the ball, get them on the ground, and then you got to win the money down. And they haven't been doing enough of that. So I think Baker's the key. If you can pressure him, he wants to try to take shots. I think he'll throw you the ball.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you one thing about him, too. Just, I mean, he's not young. He's been in the league for a long time, but he seems like a totally different guy now than he used to be. Bounced around the league, and now he's found a home in Tampa. What is it about him? Like, what has he changed? What is different about his game that's allowed him to be a viable starter now?
Well, I just think he's matured, Andy. I mean, all of us, if you get a chance to play long enough, you learn a lot of lessons and stuff. I mean, your maturity off the field, your maturity around your teammates, how you prepare. I think he does a much better job now than he was walking the streets and doing the commercials where he was living in the Cleveland Stadium with his wife and all that kind of stuff, the commercial. I think he's settled down and said, hey, I want to be a professional quarterback, and I want to be a respected one. So how do you do that? You prepare. You do the right things to get yourself ready. He had a monster year last year. It's his first 4,000-yard season of his career. 28 touchdowns, only 10 picks, took his team to the playoffs. They got a playoff win. He settled in. And I think that he's a much better player, obviously, than he was when he came out of college.
I was just looking because some of the injuries from Tampa Bay just came out.
Yeah.
That's not playing. And Antoine Winfield, he's not going to play this game.
Yeah, this secondary that they've got, Winfield, Jordan Whitehead, who comes back from the Jets. He was in Tampa for 4 years. I think went to the Jets for a couple seasons. He had a career high last year in tackles and interceptions. Winfield's coming off a career high in tackles last year himself. He had 6 sacks as a safety.
Huh.
So those two safeties are pretty good. I don't know that I put them on the same level as the two guys that are here, but when those two guys are on the field together, they're pretty good. Now, I don't want to jinx us or anything like that. You know, you knock on wood here when I say this, but their 4 starters across the board had never intercepted a pass against the Atlanta Falcons.
Let's keep it that way.
Damn it, Arch. He did knock on the wood.
He did
knock on the table.
This wood's mad.
Yeah, he did knock on the wood. He did knock on the table.
Good. Arch, we appreciate it.
Arch.
Good to be with
Thank
you guys.
You, as always. All right, we'll come back. We'll get to an NFL no huddle to kick off the noon hour as we broadcast live from Flowery Branch. Thanks for being with us on a hump day. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.